Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Chauncey Show. We're always right. We're never left. We put God first and politics second. We want to welcome you all to an exciting show today. Today we have a U.S. Senate candidate running out of South Carolina. He is an America First candidate. He believes in honesty, transparency, and accountability are not only the cornerstone of his life, but his campaign. Tim Swain is a proud father, son, husband, and proud South Carolinian. Tim believes that politicians are out of touch with the needs of the everyday citizen and no longer represents us. Tim wants to be that voice in Washington, D.C. to serve people over politics. Let me welcome to the show, without any further ado, my friend and candidate for U.S. Senate, South Carolina, Tim Swain. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Tim, it's great to have you on. I gave a little brief introduction about you. Talk a little bit about your humble beginnings and how you began to decide to run for Senate.
Most of my background is in the construction industry. I kind of started in I was doing construction and college at the same time. I was going to college to be an actuary, actually, and I was working in the summers and around that time in the construction field and building stuff. And, you know, even back then I kind of realized, I guess, more important probably to follow your passion and be happy than the money thing. The actuary was big money, and that's what got me going to college for it, but I don't think I really necessarily would have liked it. Went into the construction field, started, as so many people did, kind of, you know, as a laborer in the masonry industry, and went from there to a foreman, and eventually got into estimating and project management. After a few years, I started to work for companies where someone would come to us with plans, like a D.R. Horton or something, and they would say, hey, listen, we need a price on building this sort of neighborhood or something. And I would be the guy behind the scenes kind of helping the company that I would represent work through the logistics of that and the contracts with them and organizing all the labor and getting everything done. So over the past 2 decades or so, probably close to that, and I've done, or managed, I should say, hundreds of millions of dollars of work in South Carolina, from thousands of home foundations to building roads and schools and jails and hospitals, working on military bases, you name it, I've built it. So what got me interested in really not even running for politics or being in politics. I can't even necessarily say that wanting to be in politics was what drove me to do this, as much as wanting to fix a problem. I'm a problem solver. And right now I've got a 6-year-old and I've got a 3-year-old and I've got some real problems. There's some people that, yeah, they're not working in the best interest of anybody right now. And so I've got the problem of, I've got to be the one making that call. You know, I've got to be somewhere where I'm not the guy just calling people frantically like everybody else on the hey, congressman, oh my goodness, the election or whatever other thing that it's so obvious. I mean, it's all right out there. It's so obvious. Everybody knows what happens. And some of the smartest people in the world play like some of the dumbest people in the world. So We got to get that out of there. You know, it's my kids and it's your kids and it's everybody's Amen. Kids. When you become a parent, you become a parent to all kids. You know, Amen. Like I see any kind of kid at the store and they're struggling and I'll stop to help a kid. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. my kid. If you're a parent, mm-hmm. you're a parent to everybody's kids. So that would probably be my biggest motivation, is just the feeling of sheer helplessness in the direction that our country's going with some of the stuff they're trying to teach our kids. And like, I'll be honest, man, like I don't want to be part of the discussion. Should we be teaching our kids in elementary school about LGBTQ stuff? I don't want to be part of it. I want to be the guy that ends that discussion. I don't want to have that discussion anymore, right? That's if a kid is in kindergarten or first grade or second grade, they don't need to be learning about any kind of sexual things, period.
Amen.
Much less a very, you know, specific aspect of something that, to be honest, seems like it's to try to steer them in a certain direction.
You're absolutely correct. Tim, you are absolutely correct. I mean, you know, our society, and, you know, when Marxists and communists, when they want to start that indoctrination, they go into the educational system. I mean, we have kids in this country that graduate high school that can't read and write, can't compete in a global society. And these idiots on the left want to teach our kids about different people's human sexuality, which is beyond my comprehension. It's beyond my comprehension. You know, I mean, even as parents as you and I are, I wouldn't be talking to my kids at that age about anything about a body part, sexuality, anything.
No. Uh-uh. I mean.
And I even have a 13-year-old daughter now, and I've never even had a conversation with her about that yet. Let kids be kids. Yeah. Like you said, go ahead, Tim.
Right. I saw a picture circulating social media where I'm guessing the girl couldn't have been more than 8, 9, maybe even younger than that. And she was petting a man dressed as a dog in bondage attire. And there was three of them. There was three guys.
My goodness.
They had almost no clothes on, just like some leather stuff and dog masks. And the headline, the article the author was trying to push was, listen, I'm introducing kink to my kid at a younger age. Why aren't you? It's like, well, morals, you know, I mean, there's the list of why I'm not is a very long list. And
of course.
I'm done
why
talking
we're not.
About that. And people want to argue, look, people want to say, hey, what I do with my kid is my business. It doesn't affect your kid. But that's not true. That's not true at all, because our kids will hang out. Our kids will go to school together. Your kid will grow up and might make some kind of law that affects my kid, or might be in some kind of position of authority over my kid, or whatever. It of course does. What anyone in the same society learns or teaches affects anyone that they live with. It's just, yeah, being a parent is what made me decide that I can't be helpless anymore. I need to do something. I don't like being on the sidelines.
You know, Tim, you hit some very salient points. And like you said, the first thing is, since we become a parent, there's nothing more important for us than to educate and to protect our children so they're able to compete in society and learn how to be independent and good civic-minded leaders. Our children today in the educational system aren't even learning about government, civic responsibilities, Constitution, Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence. And it's sad, because when you take out of our educational system the history of this country and you try to indoctrinate our kids with the philosophy of identity politics and all these other nonsensical things that do not help our children not only compete but thrive in a global environment, you're taking away our children's innocence, you're taking away their ability to grow. And yes, as parents, we should do whatever we can to fight back. And I applaud you for wanting to stand up and fight back against this behemoth system of immorality that politics holds. It takes a lot of courage for you to stand up. And my hand is off to you, and I have a lot of respect for those who want to stand up to fight against that behemoth. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting experience. It's everything that people would expect. You know, before you throw your hat in, people say, well, you're going to get attacked, and that's certainly true. I can attest that, man, I get some really crazy emails from people. But you know what? It's fine. None of that stuff really bothers me. It just kind of rolls off my back. It's more of a motivator to me. If the more... You know, I tweeted out something today, something like, look, the harder you push to try to force me to do something that I don't want to do, the harder I'm going to push back, when we start to push, and that's what we all need to do. And I think that that's why the left is kind of accelerating things right now, because the midterms, I don't see how they could possibly hold any majorities after the midterms in either house. So knowing that, I think that they're really going to swing for the fences over the next couple of months. And that's why we heard the six-point plan today. I'll be honest. I was debating. I was like thinking, man, should I listen to Biden's six-point plan before I go on the show or not? Because I knew listening to that, I was going to be pretty mad. And I listened to it, and I'll tell you, I'm pretty upset. He's trying to take the choice away from over 100 million Americans. That is the literal worst thing you could hope to be doing.
I couldn't agree more. You know, political leadership today, they have forgotten that they are there on behalf of all of the people, whether they voted for them or not. Also, I always like to mention on my show is that these politicians, when they swear to an oath of office, you don't only swear to the oath of office to the Constitution of the United States of America. You swear to the oath of office to the law that has been implored by God in our Bible. And that is something that most politicians forget. And I pray for those who have digressed and moved away from the law of the Bible when they put their hand and they swear to God that they're going to uphold that, because the wrath of God is going to come down on them eventually so hard. So I keep them in my prayers. But we have to get back, like you said, to a moral structure within our educational system to protect our children. That is the
right,
most important thing, because if we're not preparing our children properly, we're not going to have a future. They're not going to have a future. Their children are not going to have a future. And I understand that's why you're stepping up to the plate, not only for your children, for my children, for everyone's children. And
right.
That's
I mean, if they do everything they do for some sort of reason, and it's never the reason that they tell you. So when you look across the country and you see that they're taking math out of high school, and they're taking whatever, physics out of high school, and they're taking the things that you and I used to like really exercise our brains and
exactly.
develop them, when they're taking those out and they're just replacing them with things that stoke division, you know, you're taking away education and you're replacing it with hatred. It's there's a reason they do that. They want just constant anger towards one another. They can't keep people on their team unless there's hatred. They can't have anyone that feels neutral towards Republicans anymore. They have to have their people absolutely despise us, Or they'll just stop going along with whatever they're trying to get us to believe, from climate change to, you know, 68 different COVID variants that you got to be careful about now. And it's just, I don't know who needs to hear this, but almost all the stuff that the Democrats use to make policy are things that you can't see, right? They're things that a whole lot of people have to tell you exist, and there's a reason for that. There's a reason.
Right. I'm sorry, Tim. I know there's a break. Yeah, there's a reason for that, and I'll let you continue explaining the reason.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like climate change, if it really was an existential danger, they wouldn't have to convince you. You would have seen evidence. I remember back towards my high school days, and you're talking 20-something years ago, but back then it was hairspray. Man, if everybody doesn't stop using hairspray, we're going to burn a hole in the ozone layer, and we'll all be gone in no time. And people totally stopped talking about that. They went on to the next thing, and it's just using fear to control the populace. Using fear to control the populace is obviously the easy and effective way to do it when you own the media. And you own the narrative, and they're going to stick to it. They're going to stick to making people as scared as they possibly can, so they go back for their fourth and fifth and sixth boosters, and they wear two masks, and they hate us if we don't listen.
You know, you are so right. You know, the left feeds on emotions. You know, we have to debunk their emotions with policy issues that really impact families' lives. It is a shame that what the left and the Democrats and the progressive far left is doing is undermining Dr. Martin Luther King's message that one day, hopefully, my children will be judged by the content of their character, not their sexual orientation, not their religious belief, not the color of their skin. And, you know, it seems that the left and the Democrats, if we had to look at their behavior, I would say they don't like Martin Luther King. I'm surprised they haven't started taking down the Martin Luther King statues yet, because it goes against everything that these idiots stand for, these immoral, disgusting idiots. When you feed on people's emotions, that is one of the most ignorant things you can do.
Yeah, I'll be honest, and it affects my life very personally in that my wife and I are on very, very different sides of the mask debate and stuff like that. And I haven't worn one in probably a year and a half or something. I haven't gotten sick. I go into stores. I don't know if I'm a superhuman of some kind or what's going on. But my wife has, you know, she's got her stepbrother, or her half-brother, I guess he is a nurse in a hospital in New Jersey. And he tells her about the cases and whatever else and the wear a mask. And she just... That's her source of information. And even in my own life, I'm, you know, it's a battle. I can't imagine, you know, you see it at the store. I don't know how many couples and stuff get through it, but when you have kids, when I'm like, no, I don't want the kids wearing a mask. And my wife's like, yeah, they got a mask help. And I'm like, no, they don't. It just you get so over it and having the same conversations and stuff. And They've got to manipulate everyone by fear. And
you know,
it's really, really a sad thing because, like you said, they don't have any policy. Who's going to vote for their policy? They have no plans. They haven't done anything since they've taken office other than try to, you know, shore up future elections and make our lives miserable. They haven't shown the first bit of care towards any American citizen here or in Afghanistan or anywhere.
You know, I just want to dovetail off of your statement. If coronavirus was so serious, why do you have to? I've never seen this in my whole life, and I'm going on 59, where you have to promote and try to convince people 7 days a week, 24 hours a day to take a vaccine that is based on a common cold. You know, I posted an article from the American Medical Association from 1989. And coronavirus was listed as a common cold.
Right. I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
And I just want to add one more thing to that, is that Big Pharma over this past year has made over $35 billion. Also, I want to mention the COVID cases that are on the rise that they're really not telling us are the ones that are vaccinated in L.A., county alone, the 20% increase of COVID cases are vaccinated individuals. And then we have an influx. And then we have an influx of over 100,000 illegals at our borders who are going untested, unchecked in our communities. And then even with the 100,000, the 85,000 Afghans, Biden just dumped 8,500 Afghans into Pennsylvania. Are they vetted? Have they been tested medically, not just for COVID, for any type of diseases?
Well, not just that, but they're pumping those guys full of ivermectin that they're telling the general public is horse dewormer and stay the heck away from it. But they're giving it to the people that they're bringing in from other countries because they know it works. It works.
It's so, really sad.
I totally agree that it's very dystopian, to be honest. It's really crazy to sit here and have them say, well, listen, you have to go take this vaccine so that other people that have already taken it are protected. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait. What? you can't. They can't reason it. There's no logic behind it.
There isn't.
And then they change it to. Then they change it to. Well, hey, listen. It's not that it stops transmission. It's not that it. It's not that it stops infection. But would you believe us if we said if you take it, it'll lessen the symptoms if you do get COVID? But then you see stories.
Another
like
lie.
A 16-year-old kid the other day took the shot, gets COVID, and dies. 16-year-old kid. I think he was I want to say he was a football player, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong in that one. But anyway, he looked like a healthy kid. You know, he wasn't morbidly obese or anything like that. So the shot didn't help him. I don't know what the test would be where someone could say to an individual, hey, you – on an individual basis, have less chances of ending up in the hospital if you take this shot versus not. Because look at Joe Rogan versus Oscar De La Hoya. Look at those two. What happened there, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, even looking at the data, if you contract COVID without the vaccine, you automatically develop the antibodies. And if you contract it, you have a 98% survival rate, 0.2. So I don't understand, where's the fear? Why are you scaring people into something? Now the new thing is, Tim, is that get vaccinated because the vaccinated people can still spread it to the unvaccinated. That's the new one. But like you said, this stuff makes no rhyme or reason. It is completely idiotic. And even people, you know, that I have conversations with in social media, you know, that try to go against my narrative of truth of facts, their fear leads them to want to criticize my post. And I tell them, I don't mind your opinion, but your opinion is not supported by data. It's not.
Yeah,
go ahead, Tim.
The only data that you need to worry about is opensecrets.org is a great website that anybody can go to, and it can you type in the name of the politician, and it brings up whoever gives them money. So, or you can type in the donor. You can type in Pfizer, and you can see who they give money to, and those are your guys right now in Congress. It's not, and it's blatant. It's obvious. It's right there in your faces. Probably, I would say one thing that I don't know if it's an unpopular opinion I have on the Republican side. I know when it was a Supreme Court decision that the Republicans all went against the opinion that I have, but it was the Citizens United decision. And for anybody unfamiliar with the Citizens United decision, that essentially said, like corporations and things like that can give almost unlimited money to people in politics. And if we're ever, ever going to make politics an honest place where a guy like you or a guy like me can just jump in the first run and think we're going to have a real shot, well, it's going to happen from it not being so overwhelmingly expensive. So I started against a guy that's got like $10 or $15 million in the bank before I even started. So that's like David and Goliath right there times 10. So that's what people don't realize is that's where the elephant in the room is the money just suffocates most decent people out. You're done unless you're a really, really special person. Man, there's some really special guys out there right now. You know, Joe Kent is an amazing special guy. I think he's almost certainly going to win. And there's some really good ones out there. But to, for someone like me or him, in a first race, man, it's just no one takes you seriously because, well, the other guy's got $15 million more than you do. What are you going to do? Try. That's really all you can do, right? You do one vote at a time and have the right ideas and say stuff like, hey, listen, the guy that I'm up against was the mail-in ballot guy. He's the guy that got us in trouble with mail-in ballots. I don't want to do mail-in ballots. So you point out those big differences and hope they stick.
Mail-in ballots are racist. Isn't that something? A mail-in ballot is
well,
racist.
Well, I mean, Tim Scott was the biggest Republican who promoted mail-in ballots before the 2020 election.
I posted
on my Twitter, there's an interview he did, I think it's with Savannah Guthrie, where she's like, Senator Scott, here I have 2.5 pages from President Trump, single-spaced, that say mail-in ballots are how the left is going to steal the election. What do you think? And he says, well, hey, listen, I'm with most of America, I think, when I say that mail-in ballots are going to work out just fine. You're going to have to talk to President Trump about that. Mail-in ballots will be totally fine. I'm with the rest of America.
You know, Tim, it's interesting as I'm listening to you, you know, I grew up in politics my whole life. My dad was involved in politics. So I have a different perspective. Not saying that you're not right. You're absolutely correct. The system, the political system is inherently corrupt. If you're not a part of the good old boys network, and I'm not saying white, black, purple, or green. If you're not a part of the clique, where you're going to take money,
right,
you're going to give money, you're not going anywhere. You know, I noticed my last stint with the Republican Party was I ran for county committee in 2015, and then I ran for municipal vice chair. When I saw the corruption within the local party, within the county party, I walked away and I said, I do not want to be a part of corruption. So I can't change it by being inside, but I can be a voice against it on the outside, and that's what I've been doing. And I've been fighting even against the National Republican Party for them not supporting candidates that they should be supporting.
It's tough in the state level. It really is. My state level, my state chair says that Joe Biden fairly won the election. Get over it. Do better next time, which is absurd. But then the same guy will say, I don't expect any preferential treatment. That's fine. I don't expect it. But I do want a fair shot. I want a 50-50 totally fair shot. That's all I ask, mm-hmm. right? So I've called the state office and stuff, and I've introduced myself and said, listen, I'd like a meeting with the guy, and please, if I could just sit down, I just want to make sure that I get my fair shot, whatever, left in my contact info. And, well, they reply to that with we appreciate the offer, but South Carolina is, I forget what their terminology was, but essentially the state party doesn't get involved with any primaries until they're over, which is fine. In practice, that seems fine. I guess that's fine. But then you look on their calendar, and a week later, they're hosting a Silver Star dinner, and guess who's speaking? My primary mm-hmm. opponent, or whoever else. So it's like, you don't get involved in primaries, but you'll have the people you like come campaign at your state dinners and stuff. So you're absolutely getting involved in primaries. It's unfortunate. At the state level, it even works the way that you're talking about the people. It's the money. It's just money makes all the politics go around. And until we can figure out a way to take a little bit of that money out, man, Lindsey Graham and Harrison ran against each other. And what was it? Close to $300 million for that race or something? 300. I don't know what it was. I think Harrison had close to 200 and Graham had like 100 million. I don't know. But there's your problem, right? There's your problem. So you put $300 million, in one Senate race, and you have a whole bunch of people that are politicians that are passing that money around. Well, guess what? They have a whole lot of incentive to not do the right thing And that's what they're doing. They're not doing the right thing. I think, and I would be happy to do it. I'm sure that I don't think that I could convince people in Congress to pass it as a law. But, man, I would be totally happy to, on a monthly basis, publish, hey, this is what I took in. This was my money this month. This is what I spent it on. This is my – if I'm a federal employee and I'm working for the people, I'm okay with that level of transparency. If my money comes from you guys paying me, well, listen, I'm fine with publishing things like bank statements and stuff like that, because, you know, we have people in Congress, I think it's Dianne Feinstein, that had some beach house listed for sale for $40+ million. How on earth does a public servant who makes under $200,000 a year have a $40 million house for sale? How?
Tim, that is the problem right there, is career politicians. I support term limits. I know a gentleman from my district in Patterson who his whole life went from a school teacher, was a politician his whole life. He's a congressman now. How are you worth $5 million of a salary at $200,000 a year, and you never had a business?
How in doing the right thing? You're illegal trading stocks or something because you have insider info, or you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing something that there's just math still exists to guys like you and me, right? We
exactly.
Can sit there and we can multiply $200,000 times 10 years and figure out what it costs, and then if they're worth 50 times that amount of money, there's a problem, red flag. So I don't know what my big swings would be at that, because obviously I'd want to work within the law. But man, we gotta take the money out. If I can't limit what people can take in, perhaps there's some kind of way that I can limit what people can spend on campaigns or something like that. If you have the honor and the privilege and the luck to get elected to an office once, right? You should be running for re-election on what you've done. Money shouldn't play any factor whatsoever in whether or not you get another term. You should be able to say, hey, during my term, I did this, I did that, I did this. It shouldn't have anything to do with, well, hey, I'm friends with Larry Ellison or whoever, and they gave me millions of dollars and I made a really cool ad. Or whatever. It's just the money has to come out of it somehow or another.
For those that are tuning in right now, you're listening to The Chauncey Show. We're always right, never left. We put God first and politics second. We're honored and proud to have in the studio today U.S. Senate candidate from South Carolina, Tim Swain, talking about issues that are affecting the American people in America. Tim, we have about 20 more minutes, and I'm going to have you on my show again. We've had an awesome conversation about
sure, definitely.
That are impacting. But in the last 20 minutes, I want to try to get a sense of your focus. I know there are some issues in South Carolina that you'd like to address. Do you want to mention a couple of those issues that are important
sure.
to you that you'd like to change within South Carolina? And then maybe in the other 6 or 7 minutes, we can talk about some national issues that you're concerned
okay.
about that you'd like to maybe. I know that there's one issue when we get to the national side of a policy that you want to implement legislation as soon as you get in that I've seen mentioned on your website. So I'll let you get into all that.
Okay. Well, in my state, I live in such a beautiful state, man. We've got some of the most wonderful scenery and great people, but we've also got a problem, and that problem is our median income in South Carolina is one of the worst in the country. And the reason that is, and no one really talks about it, is our border. Our border and the people that come across illegally by the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or more make their way into our state. Now, I've like I said, I've managed hundreds of millions of dollars of construction work probably. I've also been a business owner in South Carolina. I still do have a very small construction business where I do little things here and there. But our labor market is the prices are kept so low and people have a hard time making money because of how much work is done by illegal workers. And it's a frustration to, you know, your everyday guy, but it functions well for, you know, I guess what you could say the elite class in the state. The state of South Carolina almost has the same atmosphere as the country does. You know, the country has that mentality of the elites versus the rest or whatever, and in some aspects they do here too. One person who makes probably more money than anyone in South Carolina is a man by the name of D.R. Horton. He's the nation's largest home builder. He owns D.R. Horton. He builds millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of houses in South Carolina every year, right? And he lives in Texas. So he doesn't really support our local economy that much.
Yeah,
but then
I'm
you
sorry.
Go on his job sites, then you go on his job sites and he builds homes. So the way the labor works in South Carolina is simple. So a guy will open a business, call him Fred. Fred opens Fred's foundation company, and Fred will hardly hire literally anybody. He won't hire but maybe a secretary and maybe one other person to make it look like he's got some payroll. And then from there, Fred will use subcontractors. So he'll use typically a leader, a Mexican guy or someone from Honduras or someone from somewhere else will have their own little company. And Fred will hire that guy, right? And that guy will have his own insurance. That guy will have his own employees. And that guy doesn't have to do any verification of any of his people. He doesn't have to do anything. And it's like it's a cash pay-to-play system here. And the guys that try to do it honestly, they simply can't do it because they're competing against companies that just don't even have employees. They're just paying huge, and I don't know how they operate it. I don't, but it's really bad for our local economy. So that would be one thing, you know, trying to get some better E-Verify stuff going would be a huge, huge thing for South Carolina, and making sure people taking jobs. I'm not just talking like, you know, your carpenters and your concrete people. I'm talking like even to house cleaners, people that do house cleaning. Almost our entire labor force, it seems, of you know, on the job labor and stuff. I would bet over 50% of it is probably illegal, and that's a huge number. That might sound, oh my goodness, you're crazy, but I've got 2 decades in this, and I've run through thousands of employees at different companies. You know, I know who does the work here. And then the second thing I'd like to do in South Carolina is people complain about us being like the big rhino state. You know, man, we got Lindsey Graham and we got these big rhinos. The second part of my plan locally in South Carolina would be, you know, what have we learned from Corona spread, man? Well, I'm going to be the America first version of that. That's my plan. My plan is there's 46 counties in South Carolina. If I'm so fortunate enough to get a first term, well, then I'm going to schedule a weekend in each of the different counties, right, where people can come and we can sit down. And if you're looking to run for local office, if you're looking to get involved, if you're looking to help out, if you're looking to run for a congressional seat in South Carolina, if you're an America first person who cares about our school board, anything, sheriff, I don't, right? Too many people on our side get elected and then they go in and then they complain and say, well, man, I wanted to do stuff, but nobody was along with the idea. I couldn't get anybody on board. Part of your job, if you get elected, right, is to surround yourself with people who will be on board. So that's part of my plan that I don't think many people are really talking about is I don't want to work with the other side. I don't want to go to Washington and be friendly with the left and try to negotiate with them. I don't want to do that. They hate us. Like, they openly hate us. They want to take our right to vote away. They want to take our right to make medical decisions away. Well, I want to put more Republicans in office to make sure that they don't ever have the opportunity to do this stuff again. I'm openly saying I don't want to work with you guys. You've proven that you're absolute tyrants, and I don't want you to have any decision-making ability anymore.
That's pretty the long and the short. If I may, I caught what I was reading before. This might take a few minutes to end the show.
Sure.
Which is awesome. In an effort to return power back to voters, you state your first piece of legislation will be allow the recall of elected officials who renege on campaign promises or who support legislation that benefits political and economic elites over the common good of South Carolina residents. I think that that is stupendous.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
I think that that's what we need to start doing is pigeonholing these elected officials to accountability. And if you want to talk a little bit more about that piece of legislation, be excited to hear about it.
Sure. I wrote it a few months ago, kind of modeled it after what's going on in California. Honestly, the feedback I've gotten on it has been great. Most people have said, wow, Tim, you've actually put the limits of being able to initiate a recall way lower than what I would have. Well, good, right? Good.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be you should be doing a good job, right? You shouldn't have the Gavin Newsom thing, the fact that there's even the possibility that man could survive a recall election just absolutely boggles my mind with what he's done to that state. People shouldn't have to fight that hard to get themselves someone that's going to work for them. I did write in that you need the plurality of the vote for a recall, the same as what they have in California, but I did make the limits a little easier for people to be able to initiate recalls. And it's a federal plan. Just like anything else, you know, it's something I can promise that I would introduce, and I don't know who would go along with it, but I'm so confident that I will do a fair and honest job that the very, very first thing I want to do is give people the ability to fire me if I'm not doing a good job.
Awesome. I really want to echo, because this is really powerful what you just stated. You want to lower the limits for people to be able to recall elected officials while raising the bar of integrity of elected officials. I think that's awesome, Tim.
I appreciate that. We don't have that. Some states don't have it. We don't even have it right now. I had looked into recall before I decided to do this, and my wife would challenge me every day. Hey, you know, I'm sick of hearing about it. Do something about it. Well, I'm gonna. You got it.
Since you brought up your lovely wife, I'm going to also let you know, and my audience know, I'm going to keep you in your prayers, because I don't know if I'm divorced because I never want to fight against my wife. Your battle with the mask with your children, my hat is off to you, because I don't know how you do it. And I'll keep you in my prayers, because that is a big challenge. It really is. And I hope it really doesn't put more of a strain on your relationship with your wife. Very, very troubling to hear that the government is – that's how corrupt our government is. They're separating families now.
Yeah.
You know,
they got
families,
you know,
arguing about the VAT and no VAT. First of all, it's my body, my choice. What happened to my body, my choice? What happened to my body?
Thankfully, I got my wife to hold off long enough on the vaccine to where people she worked with had taken them and still gotten COVID. And I was like, hey,
right. You know, Tim,
we'll see how that goes long term.
And speaking about the shot, they're pushing for us to get COVID vaccinated, but there is no vaccine for the Delta variant. But they're not telling us that. Keep getting vaccinated, but there's no vaccine for the Delta virus.
Well,
and
I
the
mean,
ones,
realistically,
yeah.
realistically, there's no vaccine, period. You know,
for a cold.
When you're below a certain level of effectiveness, when you're below a certain threshold of effectiveness, it's not a vaccine, it's a therapeutic. It loses the term vaccine. There's perfect vaccine from research. There's perfect vaccines and there's imperfect vaccines. Perfect vaccines are above a certain percent effectiveness, and imperfect ones are below a certain percent effectiveness, and they're more of a therapeutic. We don't even have a COVID vaccine until it starts stopping transmission and infection. We don't even have a real vaccine yet.
And you know what's interesting is that all we have to do, which I do, I don't get colds, I never had the flu shot, but there is something that I do, is I take vitamins to boost up my immune system. Vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, B complex, and zinc. That's all you need.
Yeah,
that's all
and,
you need.
And get active. Yeah, get active. It bothers me, you know, that, man, I'm a little over 6 foot tall. I'm probably a little under 190 pounds or so. I'm in what I think is relatively decent physical shape. And there's people out there that are 400 pounds on the internet that are really mad at me because I won't take the vaccine because of their health. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. They want you to take the vaccine because of their health is bad.
Right. And it's like, man, you're literally twice my size. I don't even...
And you know the ironic thing is, as we're going to a close, out of the 610,000 deaths, most of those 90% are from nursing homes.
Yeah.
Our elderly had underlying conditions, and it's like anybody, we forgot that when people get the flu, 30 to 40,000 people were dying for getting the flu because then it went to pneumonia. It's the same premise.
Yeah. No one wants to talk about the average age of someone who dies from COVID is literally older than the average age of someone who just dies.
Yes. And now to push vaccinations on children.
On kids. It's
unconscionable.
It just spikes. Oh.
Me as well. You know, Tim, my daughter, my 21-year-old daughter's in her last year of college. Now, we're pro anti-vaxxers. And when she told me, Dad, the school is making me take the vaccine in order for me to finish my last year, I was beside myself, Tim, for 2 weeks.
I can imagine.
And I'm saying to myself, and the sad part is that there's no recourse. Like if my daughter, God forbid, gets sick and dies as a result of that shot, I can't sue anybody. Everybody is forgiven. Lawyers, big pharma, government, everybody is forgiven if you die from a COVID shot. Schools, everyone. Really?
It's just I'll offer you just one quick anecdote on the local level how bad it is. The biggest hospital near me is MUSC, Medical University of South Carolina. It's when my youngest son was born. We've done a lot of business with them for that and whatever else. I called them once. I was like, hey, listen, I see you guys are advertising and advocating for younger kids to start getting a COVID shot. Can I please present you some counter data, some bears numbers? This is crazy to me. Young kids don't need this, blah, 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 blah. I said, why are you advertising? MUSC, Medical University of South Carolina, receives federal funding to run those ads.
Yes.
Do you think it's right that a medical hospital should be getting paid to put their name on government propaganda to give it credibility? No, 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 no.
Tim, and they get paid for every time they state a person died of COVID. They get federal dollars, and the mainstream media is not going to talk about this. Every death that they say is related to COVID, the hospital gets a boost in money.
It's tragic. It really is. My son went from, he was really excited to go back into in-person learning. He needs it. Some kids do well in homeschool. My kid doesn't. He went back for 2 days with no mask. That was their rule. The second night, they dropped a mask mandate against our state law. And then Wednesday he went in, they were handing out masks, and I went in to pick them up. I'm like, nope, let's get them out of here. And I raised such a stink, they they sent him home to quarantine for 2 weeks. They said, your kid was around somebody with COVID, just take him home for 2 weeks. Well, anyway, by that Friday, they closed the whole school. The whole school's back on virtual learning. So we're back virtual learning again. These kids, man, and what they're doing to my kid is I could never forgive it, and I need to stop it right now.
You know, Tim, you know, I'm thinking about my youngest daughter's 13. Why does my 13-year-old have to be thinking about, Dad, should I take the shot? I shouldn't take the shot. Look at the pressure that they're putting on these children.
Yeah.
To think about.
Yep.
Now, I'm having a little issue because I'm totally against the vaccine. When, first of all, you're putting fetal tissues. I mean, people don't even know what's in the vaccine. Fetal tissue from babies, aborted babies from the 70s and 80s. They're attempting to alter your DNA.
They are. They are not attempting. They are for sure doing
exactly.
It. Last Thursday, my son's in elementary school, so his school I don't think necessarily participated, but my son's school district had a vaccine clinic sponsored by Pfizer last Thursday. A vaccine clinic sponsored by Pfizer from my son's
So they have
district.
An economic benefit. Like I said, it's not about health. It's about money. And when you start using our children, you got me getting upset like you're upset. You know, leave our children alone.
Yeah. Every time Joe Biden talks about, the 12-year-olds and the under-12s and stuff, like I know he's coming after my kid and my anxiety and my blood pressure go up a little bit. And I'm like, all right, what are we going to do to stop this?
Exactly,
it's,
Tim.
I'm in protect my young mode right now.
Of course. And your children are 6 and 3, so you're hyper-protective.
Yeah.
I mean, my youngest
sure.
is 13, so it's not as bad, but still, why does a 13-year-old have to be thinking about making the decision of a vaccine? Getting vaccinated.
Getting pressure from
the pressure.
School, getting pressure from their TikTok influencers, getting pressure from Twitter, Facebook, you know. It's really for – and kids, you know, your 13-year-old probably has got a 99.9997% chance of being fine. And even more – and you know what? I'll be honest. The really sick thing about the survival rates is that we're discovering now what we knew all along, that early treatment was the answer to COVID, you know, like the monoclonal antibodies and the ivermectin and stuff. We knew that
all along. How about Donald Trump said hydrochloroquine, 2 days.
Yeah,
he was done with it.
Right.
But because Donald Trump said hydrochloroquine, we can't use that. Because
right.
It would be cheaper to give somebody 2 pills than to give them a vaccine. It's about money.
Yeah.
Think about it. Now they're talking about a booster. For what?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, think that they're trying to inject not only fetal matter altering our DNA, but I believe that they're trying to put the tracking chip, microchips, in that vaccine to track us as well.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised. Tim, listen, unfortunately, we're out of time. We had a great show today. I can't thank you enough for what you're doing.
Great. Thank you.
You know, for your state. I'm definitely going to have you back on again. If people want to donate to your campaign, volunteer, or contact you, please share that information with my followers.
Sure. We'll do. Website is just Swain for Senate, SWAINFOR Senate.com, and all that good stuff's on there. And I've always got, regardless of all the really terrible hate mail I get, I do always have my messaging open on Twitter and stuff. So I encourage people, you know, if you need somebody to talk to or whatever, the world's really crazy right now. And I'm always happy to help people. My platform belongs to anybody. If you're about to lose your job over not wanting to take a shot, send me a DM, and I've got, you know, all my followers or whatever on Twitter. We'll put it out and we'll see what we can do to help. Let's stick together and figure this out.
Thank you so much, Tim. God bless you. God bless your family. God bless the courage you have to want to stand up against this behemoth, corrupt political system to fight back, not only for your children, my children, for all South Carolinians and Americans. Man, we thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you
so
much.
Back.
I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a good one.
All right. God bless you. We'll talk soon. Bye.
God bless. Those that are tuning in, you're listening to The Chauncey Show. We're always right, never left. We were honored and proud to have in the studio U.S. Senate candidate for South Carolina, Tim Sweeney, the People's candidate, the American First candidate, and also the Children's First candidate. You know, we had a very exciting show talking about a lot of issues impacting everyone's lives. You know, I want to take a moment to offer prayers to all of my followers. I hope that they are safe and healthy. And I want to thank all of you for your support for keeping my show alive. I want to thank all of those who've made donations to my show. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to do this. And if you're able to make a donation, please consider donating to PayPal Me The Chauncey Show. That's PayPal Me The Chauncey Show, so we can continue to be a voice for we the people in the nation. Up next on Tuesday, we have an exciting show. I have Black Hawk helicopter pilot, retired Army, Ingrid Centurion. She is going to be in the studio on Tuesday night. I'm excited to have her on. It's ironic that I went to high school with her sister, so we just found out that information recently. So we're going to have an awesome show on next Tuesday. And then next Thursday up, we're going to have, let me double check what we have here on the schedule for next Thursday. Okay, and then after we have Ingrid on, we're going to have Marvin Jeffcoat, who is a conservative running out of Queens 26th District Council candidate. So interesting to see what that conservative out of Queens has to offer New York. That's going to be an exciting show. And then the following week, we're going to have another candidate running for governor of New York, Derek Gibson. And then we're going to have one of Jersey's own, New Jersey 4th District U.S. Congressional candidate, Mike Blassie, will be in on the 23rd. And then we're going to have Keith Frecht from Florida 21st District running on the 28th. And then on the 30th, we're going to have Tea Party co-founder, National Tea Party Movement co-founder Michael Johns in the studio. I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening to The Chauncey Show. God bless you all. Be safe, and as always, keep the faith. Oh, before I forget, please follow The Chauncey Show on all social media platforms, except on Twitter. We were suspended once, so now it's Chauncey Show USA. You can follow me on all social media platforms. New York Talk Radio Host, that's NY Talk Radio Host. Please follow me. Subscribe to my blog. If you have any questions or you want to come on the show, please send them to me. Thank you all for listening. Have a good night. And remember, God bless you all. Keep the faith.